as a caregiver, you know, and a mom or father or parent, you know, we have this thing where we will put our children first and we'll put ourselves second.
Yes.
Well, I went to my doctor and I love her, Dr. Killigrew, and she gave me a reality check. And she said, Linda, I know you love your son and I know you're trusting in God. She said, but I'm going to need for you to start taking care of you. And she said to me, you know, it's just like when you're in an airplane and, you know, they give the oxygen mask to the mom or the dad.
Oh, yeah.
And then they say, you take care of the baby. Now, she said, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be here to take care of Darian. Wow.
Great analogy. Oh. Welcome to It's Settled, the Ametros podcast. Each episode, we're going to dig into the humanity in workers' compensation and insurance claims, exploring the stories of injured people and those who support them, as well as the good work professionals are doing in the industry. And now, I invite you to join me, Sean Dean, General Counsel at Ametros and the host of It's Settled. Now, it's settled. Let's get on to the episode. We couldn't be happier to have Linda McCoy here. She's mother of Darian Smith. Linda, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Sean, for having me.
It's our pleasure. As we get into it, you're an incredible person with an incredible story along with the journey, you know, with your son. And I guess for, you know, our listeners, let's kind of start from the beginning of this journey with the injury involving your son, and maybe take us back to the day, if you can. I know it's difficult to talk about, but the day that it happened, and kind of describe what went down that day and how he was injured.
Wow. Well, yeah, it is difficult, but let me try and express it the best way that I can. My son, Darian, he was in college at the time, working at the store, and he suffered two head injuries in the span of 2 weeks. The first injury, he was putting up merchandise on the shelf, and unfortunately, the top shelf was too high, and he had to stand on the, I guess, the pallet that was up there. And when he stood up, the pallet broke and he fell 20 feet, hit the back of his head on the drywall, left a huge hole in the wall, and he landed on his buttocks. They brought him home to me. And when they brought him home to me, he was kind of like out of it, dizzy, had two guys, one on each side, bringing him in the home. And I was like, oh my God, what happened? And he said, well, he fell. And I was like, so, well, why didn't you guys take him to the hospital? And he was like, well, the supervisor said for us to bring him home. And I was like, no, he needs to go to the hospital. And so they took him to his bedroom and they laid him down. And he says, no, Mom, just let me lay down for a minute and let me get some rest. And, you know, I'll let you know if I'm not feeling well. So I said, OK. Now, at this time, I had not seen the wall. I had not gone to the store at this time, so I didn't know just how serious the fall was. So he laid in the bed, and he laid there for about a few days, and then he said, well, Mom, I feel good now. I feel better. And he returned to work. When he returned to work, he was getting ready to put some supplies up again, and the pallet broke. The pallet broke and hit him in his head. And at that time, they brought him home to me again. And the second time they brought him home to me again, he said, okay, Mom, he laid down for a couple of days. Okay, Mom, I'm okay. And I'm like, no, son, I don't know about this. I don't think you're okay. I think you need to go see a doctor. At that point, I picked the phone up and I called the supervisor and I said to him, I need for you guys to have my son looked at. I need for you guys to have him examined with x-rays just to make sure that there's no damage done. And so the supervisors were saying, no, there's nothing wrong with him. He came to work. He's fine. I'm like, no, I don't know. So at that point, I went out to the store myself. When I got to the store, that's when I saw the huge hole in the wall where he had fallen the first time. And when I saw that hole, I said to myself, there's no way that there's nothing wrong with him. And I went back home and I said to him, son, you know, this could be internal damages. He goes, but I don't feel anything. And I'm going, but it could be internal. Please go get x-rays. And so he says, no, mom, you know, I got to pay for my education. At that time, he was paying for his own education. And he goes, and I need to help you, you know, with the bills. And I just need to go back to work. Just please, if I get in any pain, I will let you know. And so I said, okay, I'll back off, but promise me that you'll tell me if you get in pain. He said, okay. Well, he still didn't tell me that he was in pain. So I went on my own after that, and I made an appointment for him to see the doctor. I talked to my mom, and I says, no, I just don't feel good about this. I'm just going to make an appointment myself. Well, unfortunately, would you believe, Sean, like the day before my child was supposed to go to the doctor, he walked around like that for like 3.5 months. And the day before that he was going to go to the doctor, I got a phone call telling me it was like 11 o'clock at night that he was in the emergency room and that I needed to get to the hospital right away. Mm-hmm. Well, nobody told me the extent of his injury. When I got to the hospital, I went to the emergency room. And when I did, I saw my son laying there, unresponsive, tubes coming out of everywhere.
Oh my God.
When I saw him, I went into shock. And the only thing I could tell you, I remember being outside of the hospital, sitting on a bench, and something just told me to get up and go back in there and pray for him. So I got up and I told my mom, I said, let's go and let's pray for him. And so we went in the room and I started praying for him. And I said to him, son, you can't die because your brother needs you. You just cannot die. When I said that, one tear.
Hmm.
Just rolled down his face. And I looked at him and I noticed he couldn't speak. And I said, what's wrong with you? You can't talk. He couldn't do anything. He just was laying there blinking his eyes. And that's when I called. The doctors ran in and they saw that he was responsive. And then I said to him, to the doctor, I said, what's wrong with him? He's not talking to me. And they said, we don't know what's wrong with him. They had no clue what was wrong with him. And he just laid there unresponsive and they were trying to treat him and trying to figure out, you know, what to do with him. And then finally, they transferred him to Jackson Memorial Hospital. And that's where they came up. Dr. David Noble and Dr. Barth Green came up with the diagnosis that he had suffered the worst brain stroke that a person could have. Mm-hmm. And then they informed me that no one had survived an injury like that. And that he was at that time, he was the 25th person to have an injury. C1, which is right there at the brainstem. Mm-hmm. And they said that that I should prepare myself. The prognosis was death. They said that prepare yourself that he's going to die. And so at that point, I told Dr. Barth Green, he said, the only person that can help you, that was Dr. David Noble. He said, the only person that can help you is God.
Oh, wow.
And I just reached into my spiritual background and with everything that I had. And I said, well, then I have all that I need because I do have God. And at that point, that's when I started praying. And I just really went into literally left this earth in my mind and in my spirit. And just asking God to please grant me mercy for my son. He stayed at Jackson for a month, and then they determined that the Christopher Reeves Hospital, Nick Bonicani, they said that they couldn't help him. They never treated anybody with C1. They said that the only hospitals, there was three of them. One was here in Atlanta. The other one was California. And the other one was in New York. And they said that they would transfer him to either one of those facilities to see if they could help him.
Were there points at time where he didn't he code?
I was getting ready to get to that. He code. Oh my God, Sean, Jesus. Anyway, when he got to, I chose Shepherd.
Yeah.
As fate would have it, I had a sister that worked at Shepherd. She had been there for 10 years as a respiratory therapist. So I chose Shepherd because of my sister. And my sister got the people there to open the door and let Darren in. So she flew to Miami and they air ambulanced him from Miami to Shepherd. Well, when he got to Shepherd, that's when it all started. His health started really, really declining fast. Sean, for 11 months, he was coding 4-5 times a day. He would just code and they would have to bring him back. He would code so much. I didn't leave his side. I stayed right there in that room. It got so to the point where whenever he would code, I would jump up and I would get the bag and I would bag him and give him breaths and turn the oxygen on until the team could get there to work with him. I went through this, Sean, for, I kid you not, for 11 months. When they sent him home, they told me that, okay, we've done all that we could do. And they sent him home. They didn't give me any doctor referrals. They didn't give me anything. They just sent they told me 2 weeks tops, he'll be gone.
Weren't there some suggestions that they impose a DNR?
Yes, I'm glad you, thank you, Sean.
Do not resuscitate. And you said, absolutely not. And you gave Darian that choice. You asked him, right?
I'm so happy that you reminded me of it. Oh my God, it's been 30 years. It's so much. So forgive me if I thank you for bringing that to my attention. Oh yeah, it was every Friday, Dr. Leslie would come to the door and he would say, "It's grave, Miss McCoy. It's very grave. He won't make it." So, and I would say to him, "We'll see you Monday. We'll be right here. We'll see you Monday." So because I would not DNR him, they kept saying that they had never seen anybody to live with that and they didn't think he was going to make it. And they would say to me, you know, "Can we, you know, get you to sign off to DNR him on the next code?" And I would say to Darian, you know, "They want me to DNR." He goes, "No, I want to live." Now, at that time, he couldn't speak. I had to put the alphabet board in front of him. And then, you know, I would spell out whatever he was trying to say to me. He would blink once for no and twice for yes. So every time he would blink, I would write the phrase down and he would say, "I want to live and I will walk again." So when Dr. Leslie and those would ask me to DNR him, I said, "No, he's here. Mentally, he's here. And as long as he says he wants to live, then you bring him back. I don't care how many times it take, you bring him back. He says he wants to live and he has that right." So, you know, everybody thought I was nuts. They thought I was crazy for doing that. But, you know, my son had a strong will to live. He said he wanted to live. Anyway, when we got home, my sister and I, we set up a plan for him. And we got the doctors. We lined up the doctors. We got nursing for him. We did everything that we needed to do to help him to try to give him some kind of a quality life. Well, he kept coding when he was home. He coded a lot. And we just trained the nurses on how to do CPR on him. So when he does code, they would know how to do it. So Darian's care, even to this day, is still ICU care. We still have to handle his care as if he's in ICU because it's still serious. And so what's so remarkable about that, Sean, is that, you know, we got 30 years in this, sweetheart. 30 years. 30 years. Can you believe that? They told me 2 years tops and he'd be gone. Now he's down in medical history as the only person to survive this injury and for him to survive for 30 years. And so I know that this happened for a reason. And I know that this is larger than us, my family and my son. I do understand that, you know, people that have serious injuries like that, if the human spirit is just phenomenal. It's just something that I can't even express. I can't explain. But if a person has the will to live, it is my desire and my passion. And I believe this with everything within me, Sean. If a person has a desire to live, you as their caregiver, their loved ones, their family member, I feel like that they deserve a quality life. I feel like I brought him in this world. I'm responsible to take care of him because guess what? His care is like that of a baby, a newborn baby. Yeah. So a newborn baby, you give that newborn baby the best care that you can. You're very particular about who you trust your newborn baby, even though he's a man. And you got to be careful with that too. You got to make sure you don't, you know, demean him or put him down. You got to let him be a man. But at the same time, you got to understand that his care is very fragile. And it is that of a newborn baby.
I mean, I know what it's like to have a newborn, two of them. And you know, my kids are much younger, you know, 12 and 15. But there's a phase between the time they're born, when you're so scared and you bring them home from the hospital, to the even when up to 2 and 3 years old, but then it passes and they become more independent. You've been in a perpetual 30 years, like you said, Linda, in this area that requires constant monitoring, care, and obviously you have healthcare workers helping you, but what have you done for yourself? Because you're such a vibrant, positive, loving, incredible spirit. How have you kept yourself full of energy and life going through all this for 30 years? What have you done to remain positive through this?
Well, I tell you, what I really had to do, Sean, was to, I'm a realist. Thank God for that. And I do have, I'm not a religious person, but I do have a very close, intimate relationship with God that I developed from a child. So what I had to do was I had to accept what I was facing in the path that I was chosen to walk. And that is what I face every day. And the truth is, Sean, every day I wake up, for 30 years, I face death right in the face. And when I tell you, that is not easy.
Yeah, that's powerful.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy because every day he goes, he could code, and that could be the last time I see him.
Yeah.
It's not easy to face death for your child every single day for 30 years.
Explain to the listeners what type of care you described it aptly as ICU care, and just so kind of paint the picture of his setup where he's at, the care he has.
Well, I had to settle my wages and his wages in order to get a place for us to stay. Because remember, we had to relocate up here. And so it was like, I was like, well, where are we going to live when they discharged him out of the hospital? I had nowhere to take him. So my nephew let me take, I took him into my nephew's home and he stayed in their dining room area. We turned that into a bedroom for about 3 months until I could find a place to put him in. So when I found a place, they said, well, you know, you want a house, then you get it on your own. At that point, they had started paying me, $12 an hour to take care of him. That is what I was paid as a caregiver. And they said, well, if you want a home, you have to get your own home. And they said that what you will do, we'll settle your wages and his wages. And he was making like $6 an hour. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we settled our wages so that I can have a place to get us a home. And I purchased the house that we're in now with that money. And they were supposed to come in and modify it for him. Well, do you know, Sean, it took 10 years to get them to do that. My son had not had a shower in 10 years. 10 years he went without a shower. They would turn me down because what it was at that point, Sean, it was like a waiting game. They were waiting for him to die. They knew how serious that his injury was. And they kept saying, well, you know what? The prognosis is death. And I said, well, he's been here 10 years. And he deserves a shower. He deserves a decent place to stay. He was staying in an unfinished basement with just a bathroom and one little room for him. And can you imagine going down those stairs for 10 years, knowing your child was down there?
No. No.
Can you imagine? And so, you know what? And let me tell you how I made it, because you see what I'm doing now? I'm talking about it. I made it a conscious effort, Sean, not to even think about what they did to me yesterday, what they did to me 5 years ago. What I did is I just focus on what I had to deal with today. Yeah. So when I talk about it like I am now, it's like I'm reliving it all over again. I'm telling you stuff that I don't even talk about because it's so painful. I can't even imagine treating anybody that way. But, you know, like I said, my son said he wanted to live. And I said, if you want to live, you can live. And I am to this day still committed to that, to him having a quality life.
What is his current quality of life like? Like, what's a day in the life of Darian Smith?
I'm glad you asked that. So we started out with that, the day in the life with Darian. It's like, and in the morning, you know, he does not have control of his neck. You know, our newborn baby head is just, you know, no control. So it takes two nurses to transfer him and to do certain things that we need to do with him. It takes two people to do that. If he should code, you can't do like the Heisman, you know, like one person to come and cough it up. You need one person to get it out and the other person to give him breath. So it takes two people to do CPR on him. So there are certain things that we need to, on a daily basis, that that's why we need the two nurses to make sure that, you know, when he does get in trouble, that we're there to take him out of it, you know, to relieve him of whatever. But, you know, you were asking me the question about, you know, what do I do for myself? Yes. So I do understand that. And that's a very important question, because as a caregiver, you know, and a mom or father or parent, you know, we have this thing where we will put our children first and we'll put ourselves second.
Yes.
Well, I went to my doctor and I love her, Dr. Killigrew, and she gave me a reality check. And she said, Linda, I know you love your son, and I know you're trusting in God. She said, but I'm going to need for you to start taking care of you. And she said to me, you know, it's just like when you're in an airplane and, you know, they give the oxygen mask to the mom or the dad.
Oh, yeah.
And then they say, you take care of the baby. Now, she said, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be here to take care of Darian. Wow.
Great analogy. Yeah.
Very, very profound.
Yeah.
And when she told me that, it was, and she said, I want you to start doing things for you. And so what I did was, when I was coming up as a kid, don't laugh at me because it is so true, I loved opera. Opera was my first love in music. And I love ballroom dancing. Okay. And she said, do something that you really like to do. And I've always wanted to explore that. So I did. I took up singing, and I also took up ballroom dancing. I love to work out and exercise. That's the way I relieve a lot of my stress and tension. I go and I exercise, I walk and do different things like that. And so my new venture, since COVID is gone, I should say. So my new thing is Darian and my other son, they know that I love photography and I love hiking. So they bought me my very first camera. So that's something that I'm so excited about doing. Love it. And so I try to do little things like that, vacations, you know, instead of taking one long vacation, I would recommend a person don't take just one vacation a year and go away for 2 weeks. Instead, you know, take those 2 weeks and break it up during the year and maybe go like four days, four times a year. Yeah. That way you get a break. So that's how I do it.
I think it's terribly important to take care of yourself. And I think that's a good message to family members of loved ones who've been injured and are going through this to ensure that they're taking care of themselves. Because as you put it very aptly, Linda, if you're not okay, you're not going to be there to take care of that loved one. So what's it like for Darian on a day-to-day basis? What does he do to have, you know, the best quality of life that he can?
It's a great question. I love the way you interview Darian. He's an extrovert and I'm an introvert. That's why I'm able to stay. Yeah, it works. You see what I'm saying? He's an extrovert. I'm the introvert. So that's why it's easy for me. People go like, well, how can you stay there? Because it's who I am, you know? So it's like, God just put, I tell him, he gave me the perfect son, the right son. He goes, he gave me the perfect mom. So we work together. But Darian is an extrovert. Darian goes out. He has a life. He goes to church. He goes to the movies. He goes to the theater. He goes to, when they had shopping centers, he goes shopping. He lives his life. He is determined not to just sit here. And can I tell you, 30 years and he never complains. Always smiling. He's so upbeat. And that's what I tell everybody. You know how I stay upbeat? Because he's that way. He's so positive. And he's the wind beneath my wings. He's the one that keeps me going and make me want to. Because he's such a fighter. It gives me the energy to want to continue to fight for him. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 30 years on, I can't even fathom that. What advice would you have, having gone through this journey for 30 years, to whether it be a parent or a loved one of someone who's injured, maybe recently, who is just kind of going through this? What are some words of wisdom that you'd provide to them that might help fill their soul up a little bit, and help them get through the same journey that you've been on?
I can say this: never give up, never, ever give up on them, and never give up on yourself. And when you feel like you can't make it, seek help, spiritual and natural. Help yourself and don't be afraid to ask for help, you know? And the number one thing that you must do is to accept the situation. The word that I would like to leave is acceptance. Just accept what has been brought to you, because it's life and everybody's life is different. So if you accept it and then you make a commitment to do the very best that you can with the hand that you're dealt, you just play that hand and you play it to win.
And
that's the thing. You play it to win. I got great news to tell you, because all of that I said to you was, you know, I know it's been kind of sad, but let me give you guys some awesome news.
All right.
Why I say you should never, ever, ever, ever give up. Just before COVID started, I looked at Darian and he was looking very sad. My grandson was there and his younger brother was there. He's playing with his nephews. And I saw this sad look on Darian's face. And when they left, I said, wow, why did you look so sad? And I said, do you want to be a dad? And he says, Mom, look at me. I can't be a dad. He goes, look at me. How can I be a dad? Yeah. I said, well, son, you would never know. Don't sit there and don't, you know, feel bad and feel sorry for yourself. I said, go and find out if you can be a dad. You never know. Go find out. And I showed him the video of this young man. I can't think of his name, but He just has a torso. You probably heard of him. He just has a torso. And he's a motivational speaker. He has two children and a beautiful wife. And I said to him, you can have a life. Look at this young man. He went, Sean. He got the test done. And he found out that he can be a daddy.
Oh, my goodness.
So we found this wonderful young lady. And she's our surrogate. And she's going to carry Darian's baby, and we're and that should be like a month away, Sean.
Oh my goodness!
Tell me, you know, I'm just trying to hold down some of this. I want to jump.
Congratulations!
Up and down, but I'm trying to. Thank you. I'm trying to.
We may have to have you back on the podcast to talk about that.
I'm so excited for him. I'm so excited for him. So I had to share that because, you know, there's good news. It's not always bad news. And it's, you know, life is what you make it. You can make it joyful. You can make it. You can walk around and feel like, oh, woe is me. It's the worst thing in the world that can happen to me. And sure enough, that's what you're going to attract. That's the kind of life you're going to live. Or you can be in it to win it.
I love the positive attitude. There's another thread I'm picking up on, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but the word that keeps coming up in my mind when there's a lot of words when I think about you, but one is advocacy, because from the outset, he came home, he was hurt. You listened to that mother's intuition and said, nope, something's not right. And you kept, and then you went to his work. And then you advocated for him in the hospital. You advocated him for at every step of the way. So you have this level of tenacity in you that you're just like, I'm not going to give up. It's just in your DNA.
I'm sorry.
No. Go for it.
Okay. I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, in the beginning, I couldn't find an attorney to represent him because they said because his prognosis was death, that they wouldn't make any money off of it. So I had to be the attorney in the beginning. There's so many facets to this legal system when it comes to people like our loved ones. And it's just so many entities and so many different things that will come at you and that will try to tear you down or try to make you give up. Or I call them Goliaths. You know, and they come at you to bring you down, to make you give up. But what you have to understand is that no one has the right to say how long that you're on this earth, but God. Now, when God take us, we don't have any, we're just gone. But nobody has the right to prematurely take anybody's life. And they only have that power if you give it to them. Well, I refuse to give them that power. Well, this time last year, a couple of doctors got together and they thought I was doing something so phenomenal. And they decided to give me my PhD in advocacy for humanity. So it's interesting that you brought that up. Yeah, so I do have a PhD in that, and I plan on doing something with that. I'm going to have a platform where I can advocate and help people take care of the loved ones because they don't have to die and they can have a quality life if they so desire.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
I want to talk about something else too, and I want you to tell the viewers how you got there. You wrote a book called Never Throw in the Towel, which is, we haven't said that phrase yet, but gosh, that has to be your motto. How did you decide, okay, I want to sit down and write a book?
Well, I tell you, what happened is when the 10 years that I told you about, we had a lawyer and his lawyer was like, you know what? We're going to fight. We're going to fight and we're going to go into civil court and we're going to fight them. We're going to make them do what they're supposed to do for Darian because we couldn't get them to do it through the workers' comp system. So we ended up going to civil court to make them do what they needed to do. Well, during that time, Darian was like, he wanted to say something. And, you know, it's unfortunate when people see people like Darian in wheelchairs, they don't talk to them. You know, they don't treat them like they exist. Or they matter. And so one of the requests that Darian had, the only request actually that he had, was that they allow him to tell them what this has done to him. Everybody wants to talk to me, but he wanted to have a voice. He wanted to, people to know that he exists. He had feelings. And actually, he is the one that is going through this. So they promised him that he would, they would do a documentary of him. And they promised him that they would let him go before Congress to speak up for people like himself. Well, and he agreed not to testify, you know, when we went to civil court. So it didn't work out that way, Sean. He really believed the attorneys, and he thought that he was going to be able to go before Congress. And he thought they were going to do a documentary. And they didn't. And I could see that he was extremely sad. He was very sad about it. So, like I said, I prayed about it. And, you know, I cried about it because I, you know, nobody wants to see their children hurt like that.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, I think it was really cruel that they said they knew they hadn't, they didn't have any intentions on doing what they promised him. So anyway, long story short, I saw the sadness in him. And so I just came up with the idea of writing a book, and I presented it to him. And I said, son, it just wasn't meant for you just to talk to those people in that room. It was only like maybe eight people. I said, I think your story can help a whole lot of people, you know, and it just wasn't meant for you to do it that way. And I said to him, you know, think about writing a book, and then that way you can help a lot of people. And so I gave him a week to think about it. And he did. And at the end of that week, he came to my bedroom and he came into the room and he looked at me. He says, the name of the book is Never Throw in the Towel. Mm-hmm. And I said, what? Is that what you heard? And he goes, yes. I said, well, OK, the title is I Heard a Voice Say, Never Throw in the Towel. Aww. And that's how that came about. That was Darian's death. Yeah. That's how the book came about.
I love it.
And then, you know, when we wrote the book, it was during the time when the economy fell. And then Darian came to me and he says, no, we will not sell the book. So we do not sell our books. That's what I wanted to tell you.
Okay.
So if they want a copy of the book, they can reach us on Facebook. And it's a group, and the title of the group that Darian created, it's called Inspiring Individuals. And mm-hmm. if they want a copy of that book, they can reach us on Facebook, or they can reach out to me on Facebook. And I'm on Facebook as Linda J. McCoy. And we'll be more than happy to send anybody a copy of that book.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, one, that's so sweet that you're just willing to give folks a copy of the book. But I think it's important for them to hear those words and your and Darian's and voice yes. too. It yes. looks like such an inspiring book. I look forward to reading it myself. What does the future hold? What does the future hold for Darian and you? Obviously, we have some wonderful news that it looks like he's on the precipice of being a father.
And he moved. He moved his legs. He's starting to get some movement back now. So a month ago, we're purchasing equipment to help him become more mobile. And he didn't stand yet, but we got him into a squat. And so he's excited about being able to stand again. So, you know, we're just not giving up. As long as there's life, Sean, as long as there's life, we're going to live it. We're going to live it to the best of our ability. And that's what we're doing. So we're working on rehab at home. We have a bicycle that he rides like 4 days out of the week. He rides his bike to keep his muscle toned and to keep him looking good. And I, you know, of course, I give him supplements and stuff like that to keep him healthy. And he's doing great. When I tell you his health is phenomenal, it really is. John, 30 years, and he's only had pneumonia on the vent. He's vent dependent. 30 years, Sean. He's only had pneumonia 2 times.
Wow. Well, it's a testament.
And one bed sore.
Wow. You know what I have? Something's striking me as I'm talking to you. And another word that comes to mind is positivity. You celebrate not only the big victories, but you celebrate the little ones too with equal enthusiasm. I love that. Yes. It's infectious. And I can imagine that Darian's picked up on that too, because when you're around someone positive, it's hard not to be positive. I mean, just your smile and I mean, your smile comes out through your eyes and your whole being. You are one of the most incredible people I've ever talked to. I'm so blessed to have met you, and I'm so thankful that you gave us your time today on the It Settled podcast. And I wish you and Darian and your whole family nothing but success and love and health on this journey. I mean, you deserve everything in the world, Linda. So I thank you so much.
Sean, thank you so much for having me, and God bless.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of It's Settled, the Ametros podcast. For more information and episodes, you can visit us at our website at ametros.com. That's ametros.com. Or head over to iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. We hope you enjoyed this episode and look forward to sharing more stories of people overcoming their workplace accidents and bodily injury claims, and those who are working hard to make a difference for them. So it's settled. We'll see you next time.